Again, Jesus' disciples are murmuring or complaining about something. And although this is kind of common amidst all the things that go on, we still wonder why. Why are they murmuring? What are they upset about? And in order to answer that question, we have to go all the way back to the beginning. For 5 weeks now, we've been journeying through the 6th chapter of John's Gospel. And we have to keep the whole passage together, the entire chapter, to really grasp what's going on. So 5 weeks ago, we had the feeding of the 5,000. Jesus took 5 loaves, 2 fish, fed a whole bunch of people, everyone was happy and satisfied, yay. That was the starting, the kind of miracle moment that led to the rest of Jesus' teaching. Jesus commonly does that. He performs a miracle, then teaches, or teaches, then performs a miracle to make a point. His next point was to take that moment of the feeding of the 5,000, the multiplication of the loaves, and explain the event of the desert, when they were fed with God by manna. And to make a point that Moses was not responsible for the manna. God made the manna. It came down from heaven. God fed his people. And then from there he progressed to call himself the bread of life, stating, I am the bread of life, which in a symbolic way made sense at the moment, the sense that he is feeding his people, God continues to feed his people, but then he clarifies it. And that's where we left off. Unless you eat my flesh and drink my blood, you do not have life within you. And then from there, he would have spent last week, which we didn't have because of the assumption, explaining what that meant. What does he mean by, unless you eat my flesh and drink my blood, you do not have life? The challenge for us is, he was very, very descriptive, almost blatantly descriptive and uncomfortable, which is why they're grumbling. And so we'll have to grasp what Jesus said to understand why they're murmuring and so upset. So Jesus said, unless you eat my flesh and drink my blood, you don't have life. And his words are so immensely descriptive. He used the word sarx for flesh, you know, the stuff that sticks to our bones, that stuff. And then he, instead of using the wonderful word estio as to eat, which means to like dine or to have a nice meal, he used the word trogain, which is where we get the word trough from. So another way to translate it is to gnaw. The image we have that Jesus gave us is that we're supposed to gnaw on his bones and eat his flesh that way, kind of like pigs that come to the trough and start gorging. It's a very descriptive and kind of disgusting image. Then to add on to it, he says, unless you drink my blood, you will not have life. So now we have the sense of drinking blood, which is still very gross. There's nothing that should not be disturbing about this. And for us, even that is rather disturbing. We don't think about eating human flesh and even drinking blood. That's like vampires and weird werewolf things. That's gross. But for a Jewish person, it's abhorrent. It's massively disgusting because Jewish law forbade the drinking of blood in any form or fashion. If you were to eat an animal, you had to drain all the blood out first, then you can cook the animal. No blood was to remain. Blood was sacred to God. And so that alone was enough to drive them mad. How dare you say that we should oppose the laws given by God? Not to mention eating human flesh, which is gross to begin with. God also forbade the eating of human flesh, or even touching a dead corpse would be defiling. So the fact of Jesus commanding them to touch his dead flesh, to eat of it, and to drink blood was so radically abhorrent. He's basically telling them to forsake the entire covenant, all Jewish law. And that's why they're upset. Which I would be too. That'd be pretty unsettling for me as a Jewish person hearing these things. But Jesus doesn't back down. Unlike when they're in the boat sailing away after the feeding of the 4,000, he says to his disciples, beware the leaven of the Pharisees. And they say, oh, he's talking about bread. He's talking about the miracle he just performed. Jesus said, no, I'm talking about what the Pharisees teach you. Why didn't you get that? So there, they thought they got it, and he corrected them. In this passage, however, he doesn't back down. After stating, unless you eat my flesh and drink my blood, then they go, what? How can you say that? He reiterates it again and reiterates it again to make his point. This is the only way. So he's not beating around the bush. He's not speaking symbolically. He's not trying to make some like fanciful theological point. He's making a very real, bold point with very descriptive, almost disgusting language to get that to us, that this is the way it ought to be. Hence the Eucharist. But there's more to this passage than just that. Because they murmur and they get frustrated, but then they leave. These are people who were there with Jesus. They saw him face to face. They heard his voice. They heard his teachings. They saw the miracles. And this moment was enough to drive a vast majority of them away. Many disciples left. We almost have the image that so many left that the only ones remaining were the 12 disciples. Because he turns to them and said, "Are you going to leave too?" Almost like they're the only ones left. This was unsettling to the point where he lost so many disciples, which isn't really surprising to us. We are in a new age in the church in which the largest group of religious people are ex-Catholics. It's the first time in the age of Christianity in which that has been the case. There are more ex-Catholics out there than Catholics, which shows us that the truth of the gospel is still very true. It's hard to accept God's teachings. They are very challenging. So challenging that there's never been a group of people or an age in the entirety of Christian and Jewish history in which they like God's laws. Even from the very beginning, when they first journeyed in the desert, their first complaint was, "We don't have food, we don't like this." It wasn't about the new life God could give them or all these things. They didn't like it. And then from that point forward to the modern day, everyone has had some problem with God's laws. Or in the modern era, everyone has some problem with the Catholic Church. There's something we don't like. Marriage law, sexual ethics, ethics of the church, feeling confined, hierarchy, rules, whatever it might be. Everyone has some problem. If you haven't found it, you haven't been looking hard enough. Everyone has some problem with the Catholic Church, which is very important. There's a reason why we struggle, because they're not our laws. God's laws teach us that it's not my way. I don't get what I want. It doesn't have to be the way I want it. I have to choose to follow him, which means we have to go back to our first reading and see it in its full gravity. Joshua, right before entering the promised land, says to all the Israelites, "You got an option here, and there's no backing down. You choose God or you choose your own ways, but that's the way it has to be." Jesus reiterates the same thing in our gospel for today in a different way. It's either God or it's not. And so each of us have to make that decision. And not just a one-time decision, because that'd be really nice. Yeah, I've made it. I'm done for life. Everything's good. No, it's a daily decision. Every time we wake up, we have to make a decision. Am I going to follow God or not? Now, the nice thing about God is he's immensely merciful. We can wake up with this great fervor and think everything's going to be great, and 3 seconds later, fall away. But God is always there. He is always merciful. We can have a great day and everything seems to be going well, and the next day crash. It's okay. God is merciful. He wants us to keep trying, keep getting up, keep going again. But I really want to emphasize the final lines of today's gospel as ways to help or aid or guide our thoughts. Jesus turns to his 12 disciples and said, "Are you going to leave me too?" And Peter responds in an act of faith. "Lord, where would we go? You have the words of eternal life. We have come to believe and are convinced that you are the Holy One." Think of the gravity of what he just said. Jesus just told him, break from Jewish law for a moment and realize this is what you must do. Eat my flesh and drink my blood. You've been with me this long. And his response is one of profound faith. Where else am I going to go? I have nothing else. I have nowhere else I'm going to get the life like what you've given me. Why would I leave? You are the Holy One. Peter's example of faith is something we must also proclaim. It's what guides us through all the challenges and problems of the world, the uncertainties, the chaos. Where do I get life? Jesus alone. Where else would I go? But I want to be with God. That's our answer. So each of us must look at this gospel and ask many questions in our lives. What do I choose? Do I want God's laws or not? Do I want to follow his ways faithfully, or do I want to fall away from them? The decision's always ours. Jesus didn't say to his disciples, come back, wait, let me rephrase that. He let them be the way they are. And yet, like Peter, we must also make that ascent of faith. Where else would I go? Where else do I get life and have it abundantly?